Dear Mrs. Spitzer, my name is Christoph Lemmer. I'm a journalist for Antenne Bayern, and I'm preparing a podcast series about the attack on Israel's Olympic team in 1972 by Palestinian terrorists. Most of my material comes from the Bavaria State Archives. Some of the files are still classified, but have nonetheless been cleared for my journalistic purpose. I was not allowed to scan these still classified documents, but was allowed to take notes, which I did extensively. If you would like to browse through the material, I could send you a link with the file. The reason I'm contacting you is as follows. I guess it wouldn't be surprising if I said that I would love to give you, as the wife of one of these killed athletes, and perhaps other relatives of this 1972 Olympic team members, the space to tell their stories. I would like to cover your experience relating to the days or months before September 5th and how you perceived September 5th and 6th and the time after that. This means I would like to fly to Israel and interview you. I would greatly appreciate the chance to meet you. In the meantime, all the best. I'm looking forward to meeting you. Yours sincerely, Christoph Lemmer.
Dear Mr. Lemmer, I read your email and I will certainly talk to you. However, as I am a foreign correspondent for Dutch and Belgian TV and radio, I am currently very busy reporting about the terrible terrorist attack which took place last night in Israel. Maybe we could speak this coming Sunday when things have quieted down a bit here. Thank you for your understanding. Best regards, Anki Spitzer.
Wow, that went well. I then traveled to Israel and spoke to Anki Spitzer, but not only to her. But before we start, I should explain what we're doing here with this English version of our podcast series, Secret Files, Geheimakte 1972, Secret Files 1972, and why we are doing this. The idea came to me when I was in Israel. People there asked me if they could listen to what I was working on. I said, yes, sure, it will be online, but only in German, which was not really satisfying to them. It's a simple fact that we are Germans here at Antenne Bayern. We have never done a program or a podcast in any other language than in German. Most of us speak and understand some English, some more, some less, but we are all native German speaking. Less people here in Germany speak English than in, let's say, the Netherlands or Sweden. And yes, I know how funny German English sometimes sounds to English native speakers or the rest of the world. However, this podcast series is something special. I know that there is international interest in this case of terrorism and murder. I know that family members of the athletes who had been killed at the 1972 Olympics in Munich are particularly keen on listening to it, for good reason. It's about trying to understand how Germany deals with this issue today, after 50 years. It's about getting some insights from the country where it happened, the country that voted Hitler to be its leader and that built Auschwitz and the other concentration camps specifically to kill the Jews, the country that hosted the Nazi Olympics in 1936, that lost the Second World War in 1945, that hosted the Olympics again just 27 years after Hitler's death, this time in Munich, formerly called Hauptstadt der Bewegung, in English, capital of the Nazi movement. Here in Munich, in 1972, a new image of a new Germany should have been created. The Olympics were meant to be the cheerful games, the heitere Spiele. Nice and easy, open-minded, but it didn't work out this way. The games turned bloody instead of being cheerful. And it was Jews who got killed on German soil. Just because they were Jews. Again. And again in the capital of the Nazi movement. Today, some families of these murdered athletes live in Israel and some live in the United States. This podcast tries to center their perspective and the questions they raise. So here at Antenne Bayern, we've decided to overcome shy behavior and simply do this twice. Once in German language, as we are used to, and once in English, as we are not used to. We've decided not to care about our Germanness, and we may sometimes even sound funnily German, but we believe the people in Israel, in the US and elsewhere, should have the chance to listen to and get to know this story. Some short parts will be left in German, such as the titles and the packaging. In German, the title of this podcast is Geheimakte 1972. This means Secret Files 1972. In English, we will keep it in German, so I guess you'll get used to it. But the storytelling in our English language episodes is all in English. So, here we are. This is the foreword to episode one. German state offices can be ice cold. And they certainly were in this case, against the Israeli Olympic team in 1972, and against the families of the murdered athletes from that fateful day until today. I discovered lots of details about this icy cold officiousness when I rummaged through thousands of pages in the archived files. I spent months in state archives. Every time I went there, I had to take off my jacket and store it in a locker with my bags. I was not allowed to take photos. Many files that I saw are still classified, and some will continue to be until the year 2042. I got permission to see them after signing that I would accept rules, e.g. like not publishing details about people who are still alive, with the exception of historical figures as defined by German law, which means that it is not clearly defined, and I was allowed to take notes. In practice, this meant that I was typing hundreds of pages, word for word, letter by letter, into my laptop computer. All in all, more than 600 pages. More than 600 pages that document the Palestinian terror attack against the Israeli Olympic team, which lets parts of that crime be viewed in a new light, with details that not even the families of the killed athletes ever knew before. How the terrorists traveled to Munich, how they armed themselves, how German neo-Nazis supported them, who commanded and financed it, how police and the German state failed, how indifferently German justice handled the case for over five long decades. No prosecution, no criminal court case until today. Although this should have been possible, although legally this had to be done if it were possible, I'm astonished by just how present this terrorist attack in Munich still is after half a century.
Geheimakte 1972, das Olympia-Attentat in München.
Hallo Tunis, wir haben die israelische Mannschaft in unserer Gewalt.
My brother came to do sport in the Olympics and they were murdered there.
Die ganze Geschichte, investigativ recherchiert.
I was contacted by a German journalist, Christoph Lemmer.
Bisher unveröffentlichtes Material.
It is huge and we would have never gotten this information.
Wie die Terroristen planten, wer sie beauftragte und bezahlte.
Und was deutsche Neonazis mit der Sache zu tun haben. Das Minutenprotokoll des Überfalls im Olympischen Dorf und der Schießerei in Fürstenfeldbruck. Ein Minutenprotokoll behördlichen Scheiterns.
Als ich den Mann zum ersten Mal sah, trug er in der Hand eine Handgranate.
Warum sich nie ein Täter vor Gericht verantworten musste.
For us it was important that the world should not forget.
Geheimakte 1972. Ein Antenne Bayern Group Podcast von Christoph Lemmer.
Hoch wie September mehr allein, 11, kulam
Episode 1 Anouk.
Anki, Andrei and Anouk. All the Spitzer surnames begin with an A. Andrei was born on July 4th, 1945 in Timișoara. Timișoara lies at the very northwest of Romania, a part of Romania with a German and Hungarian population called Transylvania. Andrei's parents survived the Holocaust. His father died when he was 11. As a teen, he learned fencing. When he was 19, he relocated to Israel with his mother. His sister stayed behind in Timisoara. In Israel, Andrei becomes chief coach of the Israeli Fencing Association. At the age of 23, in the year 1968, the Fencing Association sends him to the Netherlands to enhance his skills. This is where he meets Anki. Anki looks back.
I met Andrei in Holland. I'm from Holland, and he was from Israel, and he was sent by the Fencing Federation of Israel to Holland to go to school there and to become a better fencing coach. So he was going to school there, and he was speaking Dutch already, and I met him because I was a fencer myself, and he was my coach. Of course, I had no idea that he was from Israel. I had been in Israel several times, working on a kibbutz like every young person does, and so on.
Just a little explanation, because this is not common knowledge today. A kibbutz is a type of a rural commune. They were very popular in Israel and some still exist today. There were many young people from Europe who traveled to Israel and who worked as volunteers in kibbutzim, just as Anki did.
So at one of the condition trainings, which was very tough, I said the word maspik, and it is a Hebrew word and it means enough. So he looked at me and he said, how do you know the word maspik? I said, well, I was in Israel and I worked in a kibbutz. And that, he said, I am from Israel. How nice that you were there. Can we meet after the training? We have a beer. And that's how I got to know him better than only being my coach. And I must say, you know, it was really love at first sight. And so we decided already quickly afterwards. He had to go back to Israel because he was sent for 2 years. And he said, would you come with me? Although he knew that I wasn't too crazy about Israel after being here several times. And he said, come with me if you can. And I said, I thought about it and I said, you know what? I'm coming with you.
I have been a member of the Black September organization since February 1971. This organization aims to violently free Palestine. It was the task of this organization to kidnap the Israeli Olympic athletes without bloodshed in order to be able to make an exchange and free Palestinian prisoners in Israel.
Anki was 24 years old, and she just did it. She went to Israel with Andrei.
I left my friends, I left everything, my education, I went to Israel. And where did I go to? Not to Tel Aviv or to Jerusalem, to a small fencing academy at the Lebanese border. You know, and it was so on the border that they closed the road at 5 o'clock in the afternoon because it became too dangerous and then you could not get out of your house again. So people told me, you have no idea where you're going because there is nothing there in Biranit. That was the name of the place. They said there is not even electricity. They have a generator and there is not a cafe to go to or a shop to go to. So I said, you know what? Andrei is going to be there. So I'll be there. I don't need anything else. So we lived for a year at this border fencing academy. And I must say it was the happiest year of my life. We had a wonderful time. I was 25, he was 26, and we were totally in love. And then afterwards, we decided to get married, and we had to get married in Holland because I was not Jewish, and you cannot marry in Israel if you're not Jewish. So we went to Holland, we got married, and I got pregnant.
Pregnant with a little girl, Anouk. And in the Netherlands, she met Anki's parents for the first time.
You know, I introduced him to my family and they said, you know, they had no clue what was happening. So they met him, but he was such a pleasant person and a gentle person that they really immediately also fell in love with him. And then when we came back, he got the wonderful news that he was selected to go to the Olympics.
File notice. In a letter dated August 21st, 1972, a source from abroad states without confirmation that there will be an incident orchestrated by Palestinians during the Olympic Games in Munich. The informant did not provide further detail about the type or dimension of this incident. The informant admitted that he had received this information from journalistic sources. However, he said it was common practice for the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, PFLP, to draw international attention to the Palestinian issue by way of spectacular acts. The Olympic Games would provide the perfect opportunity for this. Therefore, it is urgently recommended that all possible security measures be taken.
We lived in this Biranit, and the baby was born and everything. And I was a fencer, and I should have gone also to the Olympics as a fencer. But because I gave birth just before the Olympics, I just didn't go. But I wanted to be there with him, because for every athlete, the Olympics, that's the top. You know, there are world championships, there are European championships. Everything is important, but there's nothing like the Olympics. And for Andre, it was his dream to be at the Olympics. He said, I said, why would you like so much to go to the Olympics? He said, well, that is an opportunity for me to meet people that otherwise I would not be able to meet, because there are borders, we have enemies, and there, through the sport, we can meet everyone and we can talk to everyone. So it was really his dream. And I said, you know, I would love to be there with him, to experience the dream with him. But we had, of course, this little baby. So I talked to my parents in Holland, and I said, on the day that they are leaving for the Olympics with the delegation, I will leave with the baby to Holland, and will you take care of her while I go and join André at the Olympics? He said, of course, of course.
And so it happened. André traveled to the Olympics in Munich with the Israeli team. Anki flew to the Netherlands with Anouk.
My travel route to Syria was via Yugoslavia. I traveled by train. I traveled alone. Between August 22nd and August 24th, 1972, I met two leaders of the Black September group in Syria. They ordered me to take part in the kidnapping of the Olympic Israeli team in the Olympic Village. These two leaders, named Tony and Issa, handed me detailed plans of the Olympic Village in Munich. On it, they drew the location of the underground train station where I had to meet them on September 3rd, 1972 at 6 p.m.
Now, the baby cried 24 hours a day, and we had no idea why. And my brother is a pediatrician, and he came to me and he said, Anki, this is not normal the way she cries. I'll take her to my hospital and we'll do some tests. I said, yeah, but André is waiting and I don't want to tell him, because then he will leave all his fencers and he will come to Holland to be with his baby. No, you go and we'll take care of her. So I went to the Olympic village. I met André. We had the most wonderful time. Of course, I was not allowed to sleep in the Olympic village, because then in Munich, there was a men's village and there was a women's village. And at 11 o'clock, all the women had to leave the village. It's not like this anymore today. So as we were a young couple and very much in love, we said how we were going to do this. So we rented a small room somewhere in Munich so that we could be together. And every day we would go to the Olympic village. Of course, he had an accreditation to come in, but I didn't. But I said, you know what? We'll go inside the Olympic village through the exit. Because in the German mind, you can only go out through the exit, but we'll come in through the exit. So we did that every day. We came in through the exit and everybody said, Guten Tag, Guten Morgen, Guten Abend, whatever. And in my opinion, also the terrorists could have done that, because it was very simple. There was no security at all. Everything was built to show the Heiterspiele. You know, there were no policemen with dogs or whatever, you know. Even the guards, they were dressed very nicely in blue, light blue suits and everything. And the atmosphere in the Olympic Village was excellent, exactly as an Olympic Village should be. Very relaxed, everybody talking to each other, everybody moving together. We had dances, we had movies, we had sport games, you know, for all the athletes. It was wonderful. It was really an experience.
Isa explained that there would be an operation in Germany. To be more precise, Isa said that my work would be in Germany. We did not speak about the kind of work I would do there. I did not think about it further. I accepted the order as it was. Isa and Tony also explained that we would meet each other in Germany. They handed me a ticket, more specifically, a flight ticket for an Interflug flight from Damascus to Belgrade on August 29th, 1972. Isa told me that I then had to get a cab to get to the railway station. There, I could board a train to Munich without needing to switch trains.
September 4th, 1972, the day before the terrorist attack against the Israeli Olympic team.
I was the only wife that came to the Olympics because I was a fencer myself and I wanted to see the competitions as well. But most of all, I wanted to be with André. So after he finished the competitions, he asked his the chef d'équipe, the head of the delegation, if we could go for a little excursion around Munich to see the countryside and everything. And he said, you can go for 2 days and that's it, because then you have to come back and we go all back to Israel next week. Okay. And I said, André, I'm not going for a little excursion now, because I'm going home, because our baby is still in the hospital. She has been there for a couple of weeks. And I didn't tell you because I didn't want you to get worried or whatever. You came here to be part of the Olympics. But now that you can go, I'm going back to Holland. He said, I'm coming immediately with you too. So we went to Holland. We went into the hospital. We spoke to my brother, who was the doctor, and another doctor. And they said, we did all the tests on her. We have no idea what she has. In my opinion, she has, everything is fine. She sensed the excitement or the stress before you left for the Olympics, and that's why she was crying. So we were there for 2 days. And I said, André, you have to go back because you only got 2 days holiday. And I don't want you to get into trouble. And I said, okay. So tomorrow morning, I'll take the train from Holland to Munich, which was about 11 hours train ride. So we went to I took him to the train station. And on the way of the train station, there's the hospital where the baby was. And he said, Anki, just stop here because I want to go in and kiss Anouk, our baby. I said, André, there's no time because you're going to miss your train. And he went anyways, and I stayed in the car with the motor going and everything. So he ran in, he saw the doctor, and he kissed the baby, and he came back, and we went to the train station. And when we came there, the train was gone.
What to do now? André had to travel back to Munich. He was standing with Anki in the train station in Amsterdam. What then happened was really fateful. He arrived in Munich shortly before the terrorists took him and his teammates hostage. More about that in one of our future episodes. In the Middle East, at that exact moment, the leaders of Fatah and the Palestinian Liberation Organization finalized their plans for a huge terrorist attack. An attack that would shake the whole world. How this operation was planned, how the plan turned into a murderous assault, will be discussed in the next episode, titled Isa and Tony, the names of the two operational leaders. How they acquired their fighters in Beirut, Shatila and Damascus. How they prepared everything for the attack in Munich. And how they personally led the attack. That's what the next episode will be about.
Geheimakte 1972. Das Olympia-Attentat in München. Ein Podcast der Antenne Bayern Group.
Did you like this podcast? Just hit the subscribe button if you did. And of course, I would be glad if you leave a like or write a review.